apology from the Deputy Minister, Honorable Bheki Cele, has got the meeting in Pretoria, and Honorable Nkosi Qazikhulu, which has got another meeting clashing with this one. Honorable members, you are welcome. We have two issues on the agenda. One is the deliberation on the liquor product bill, amendment bill, and the first quarter performance and expenditure report from the department. So we'll start with the briefing on the first quarter, because we the parliamentary legal team engaged other portfolio committees. So I hope we have not inconvenienced the department. So we are now going to hand it over to the department to take us through the first quarter report, DGMT.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries is represented here today by the DDG responsible for policy planning, monetary evaluation, and the CFO together with acting DDG for security and agrarian reform, and the acting DDG responsible for agricultural production, health and safety, and the other team who then have been joining as part and parcel of the liquor product bill that will be discussed later on. We would like to indicate to honorable members that we have just had the resignation of Dr. Rambedi, who has joined the South African National Biodiversity Institute standing and has left the department as of the 1st of September. We are currently with acting arrangements within that area of work that you are dealing with. Honourable members, the report that you are having for quarter one would be in line with the presentation outline as presented. In short, the department has achieved 64% of all the deliverables that were there. We should note that this is a preliminary report that the department is presenting, and we hope after the verification of the information that is currently available, especially around the fisheries, the percentage would rise after we have verified the kind of information that was given. This forms the vision, the mission, and the strategic goals of the department that honorable members are of a with. And these are the structural arrangements that the department has with the six programs that are outlined, with a clear indication that the department will be next week be discussing the strategic direction, where the minister would also be looking at the areas around how to restructure the department to look at different ways of restructuring as known and directed by the portfolio committee too. The policy and strategic alignment of the department, we would know the slide talks to the National Development Plan, where there are six critical areas that we are looking at: the improvement of the land administration, the fast tracking of land reform, the creation of 1,000 additional jobs by 2030, the bringing back into production of 1 million hectares, the issues around food security, and lastly looking at putting land under irrigation. From those, then we look at the national the new growth path, which looks to set up 145 new jobs around agro-processing, and we would be aware that there was a 1 million set aside from the DTI just to deal with issues around agro-processing. We are looking at getting 300,000 new smallholder farmers. And on an MTSF point of view, we're looking at increasing ownership of productive land and the reduction of rural unemployment from 49 by 2013 to 40% by 2019. And on the outcomes, looking at there are four outcomes that we are looking at and contributing towards it. Outcome 4, 7, and 10. And the way that we contribute towards those is by looking at our programmatic way of delivering on one of the 9-point plan deliverables in the revitalization of agriculture and agro-processing value chains, where we are looking at fast-tracking land reform, looking at market access issues, looking at production, and production with specific reference to the agriculture policy action plan towards achieving the 9 prioritized community value chains and the 4 transversal indicators. The 2014 to 2019 focus will then deal with food security aspects, where previously we had 14.3 million people with inadequate and severely inadequate access to food. That has been reduced to 13.7 million for now. And as discussed at various platforms, there is a need for us as a department that to study the report on poverty that was released by Statistics South Africa to see what has happened from 2006 to 2015, and then mirror it again the current issue around insecurity. That's the work that the department has got to do and ensure that it's captured correctly. The issues that we have got to deal with in terms of the transformation of the sector will then deal with ensuring that our farmers have got a competitive edge and are able to move into the commercial space. This involves the issues of coming up with the 450 commercial farmers by the end of this financial year, and also looking at how we transform the fisheries area with specific reference to the small scale fisheries policy. And lastly, looking at sustainable forest management that we are having. And as we are celebrating the ABBA week last week, and also looking at the ABBA month, these are the areas that we are currently looking at, having celebrated that in the Eastern Cape Friday last week. We're also looking at the creation of 1 million jobs. These jobs in agriculture are on the steady rise at 24 during the first quarter of the year. We lost 8,000 jobs, and we are looking at how we can regain those jobs. But most of those jobs, in terms of the analysis, were seasonal jobs that we have lost. And we also looking at increasing the contribution of agriculture over and above the 2.5% that we're making a contribution to us. But on a broader scale, we know that agriculture, with the secondary industries, contributes just over 10% to the economy. Now, if you look at the performance highlights of the sector in the medium-term strategic framework, we are aware that there are a few areas that we might have difficulties in terms of achieving. When you look at the 1 million hectares of unutilized land, we are currently on an MTS level looking at still having 700,000 more to do. However, I would like to also paraphrase this, that if you look at the contribution that we are looking at now, it's what only comes from DAF. If you look at the outcome that is currently being reported by rural development and land reform, and looking at the broader contribution around the sector, it's a better picture that we are currently having. And the admission that we have got to make as a department is that there needs to be better coordination in terms of what other departments and what the sector is contributing, so that we can reflect a better one. I think in quarter two, we will be able to give a better reflection, Honorable Chair, in terms of our work on the 1 million hectares. But based on the target itself, we are not very convinced that we'll be able to meet that target at the end of the MTSF in 2019. We are very positive in terms of reaching our target in terms of supporting the smallholder producers And we also very positive in terms of putting 152,500 hectares of land under rehabilitation in terms of our land care programs, and we will reach that target. As we also very sure that from a perspective of dealing with the households that are benefiting from food security, with the current budget allocations, we will be able to move steadily towards that target. In quarter one, we will look at the performance highlights, Honorable Chair, and we have taken liberty to indicate that the first four programs that are up there are programs that are within administration, and we have got the Office of the DG that has achieved 50% of the deliverables, corporate services with 67. There was one deliverable that was supposed to be done by the Chief Financial Office, and that has not been achieved, but is in progress. In terms of the policy planning and monitoring evaluation, there were five deliverable spots, milestones for this quarter, and there were three that were completed. And that would follow the very same pattern, with agricultural production, health and food safety achieving 75%, food security having one milestone that is still in progress, and trade production, promotion and marketing and market access with 88%, and forest natural resource management with 100%, and fisheries management with 29%. I would like to paraphrase this one on fisheries management, that some of the information that is currently lying with fisheries is very sensitive information, and as we go to our 90th day, there will be verification that will be done by the departmental PPME, just to verify whether the areas that have been reported as achieved, whether they were achieved. But in terms of preliminary performance, this is the percentage that we can attest to. This reflects dramatically what the achievement would be. Our knowledge from the department is that while something is in progress, it's not achieved. But what we needed to highlight was those that are in progress but could not be completed during a particular quarter, and the other ones would then signify the ones that were not reported during a particular area. And I will be talking to the remedial actions that we will be taking to ensure that those that are not reported or have been reported, so as to ensure that at the end of the financial year, we are about our target of achieving more than 80% of the deliverables as we set ourselves in the APP. Now, these are the highlights that we are bringing in. I will just be talking to a few of those, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The first one would be around risk communication and awareness, where we had the plan that was reviewed just to ensure that the plan is in line with what was found in terms of the auditing of the department during this particular period. And we have also devised the 2017-18 Play Skills Plan, the WST plan that we normally have during this time, to ensure that we are in line with improving the skills of the people within the department. We target in certain areas for skills improvement. When we look at strengthening the intermittent performance management within the department, we had roadshows that we undertook to all provinces to ensure that when we come to the monitoring of projects, there is a better way of managing how projects are being run at provincial level, and there's better coordination in terms of the reporting part, as we realized that the last time around, as we appeared before the portfolio committee, there were a lot of gaps that were identified in terms of how the department does its work and reports back to Parliament on the work that is being done at provincial level. We are also, in terms of the coordination that we are having with DPME, looking at the food security and nutrition working group. It's looking at broader framework around food security and nutrition. And we also, within that particular group, also looking at vulnerability assessments that will be done in different provinces, so that we can be able to pinpoint where the areas where we have got the hungry people are, and how best would we be able to move these indices that we are having of poverty upwards, almost in line with what was done when the identification was done previously in the Kenya, which is now a better area when we talk about poverty. We have also looked at the National Agricultural Research Nation, which is one of those areas where we talk about research. Previously, this was only meant to deal with issues around agriculture, but we have since moved to also include the forestry and fisheries within that area, in line to ensure that there is also a cross benefit in terms of the areas that are dealt with when we deal about on issues that are covered by the National Research Foundation. We have also a few projects that we visited that we have that are with our universities in Limpopo and Northwest, and apologies for that, that we visited, and also the issues that we're dealing with in quarter two, we'll be looking at Fort Hare at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. On slide 15, we're looking broadly at the intergovernmental relations where we had the MINTEC, and we intend having another MINTEC this week where we interact with provinces to look at what are the progress that is being made at HOD level and what is the direction that we'll be taking, taking into consideration the challenges that are permeating the agricultural industry. On market access around housing, there was very good progress that was done around the four commodity-based cooperatives in Gauteng, Consiba, Dierenting, Ekurhuleni, and having two with the Ekurhuleni Agriculture Business Opportunity Support Strategy and also the Ekurhuleni Manufacturing Business Forum, where the secondary co-ops were concentrated on to ensure that we deal with the commodities around livestock, vegetables, and forestry. And we also supported 18 cooperatives where we also specify where this were in Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal, and in the Free State. Now, there are targets in terms of the APP around agricultural production, health and food safety, and the outlines that we are having is that we currently have got a draft policy on animal identification and traceability that has been developed. Currently being discussed with the industry. A few challenges that are currently emerging is that there might be different ways of looking at this. We are currently in discussions with the Red Meat Industry Forum to just iron out the areas that we still need to do to ensure that there is traceability. And as you know, that as you deal with issues of traceability, they go to the core of how we can do trade with our trading partners, which really improves consumer confidence in our product. In terms of the compulsory community service, we currently have got 126 vets that are deployed. We're expecting 14 more to be deployed, and these are foreign nationals that are coming in but have got to serve the compulsory community service. And we are currently in discussions with Home Affairs to ensure that we get the work permits for the 14 so that we can move towards the target that we have set ourselves within the ELE, which is 150 MSNs that would be deployed within this space. Within this space, we're also looking at the increased intake that is currently happening at the University of Pretoria to ensure that we have got higher output or throughput, that's the right way, of students from the institution. Honorable members would also know that there is a discussion with higher education to have a second vet facility in the country, and those discussions are also advancing. On plant production, we have managed to monitor seed crops and seed potato schemes for the compliance in terms of the work that is being done. And in terms of the seed potatoes, there are currently few areas that we had discussed with the scheme. Even yesterday, we had a discussion with them around how they view the industry and how we would advance the industry. As you know, that we cannot import seed potatoes into South Africa unless they are in vitro. So there's a bigger space in terms of the impact that we might have if we don't look at the seed potatoes. We have also compiled, in terms of inspection and quarantine services, a regulatory intervention report on the four areas, critical areas of quarantine, inspection, surveillance, and testing. And in terms of the legislative work, the ever elusive preservation and development of agricultural land framework bill has been reviewed in terms of the advice that we got from the Office of the State Law Advisor. And we have had 6 contact sessions with NetLeg on this bill, and we are very sure that we will be able to move in terms of the bill itself, so that once we go through, we have got to take it through the cluster system, and we think that it will soon be coming to Parliament. And together with that, we have also went to NetLeg in terms of engagements on the aquaculture bill. So we have had a consultative report that has been issued to that effect. On the slide 17 on the performance of the forestry and natural resource management, we have had consultation sessions with a few communities here in the Western Cape to ensure that the inquiry that was on the land rights and the study thereof has been availed to the communities, and there will be engagement with the communities to ensure that the decisions that have been taken in that space were adequately consulted. We also have got an agroforestry concept document on the pilots that we are having on agroforestry. As you know, that forestry is a long-term investment, and in between that investment, there is a need for people to then have a sustainable livelihoods in terms of forests. So the agroforestry will say what is the type of planting that you can, agricultural activities, let me put it that way, that you can have within a forestry space, including planting certain agricultural products and also bee production in the forest. We have, in line with the advice that we got from honorable members of this portfolio committee, worked on our draft on the climate change adaptation and mitigation plan, and it has been developed, and we are currently in consultation, and also the situational analysis report on climate smart agriculture strategic framework is also developed. These two climate adaptation and mitigation strategies, both from a climate smart agriculture point of view and also from the climate change plan, would be deliverables for the last quarter of this financial year, but we already done with them. They are now into the consultation phase because we wouldn't then come up with reports that were not properly consulted. On the fisheries management, we have been able to come up with a report on production technology for the culturing of the sea urchin, and also coming up with applicable method for the production of scallop that was developed, and we are also looking for other new candidate species for the aquaculture projects. And this is in line with our commitment that we had in Operation Pagisa that dealt with aquaculture. Honourable members, there are challenges that have been plaguing us in terms of achieving certain of the targets that we have set ourselves. And we, from slide 19, we're reflecting on those to say what were the challenges. But we're not only indicating what the challenges are, we're also coming up with the remedial action that we are taking as a department to deal with this. One of the areas that is lethargic in terms of responses is the issue around the master systems plan. There are a few units that are outstanding that would still need to have a clear indication on what we need to do on the master systems plan. And we have taken a resolution that these directorates have got to be consulted during this quarter in order to conclude the MSP process. there has been also challenges in terms of the 100% submission that we have sent ourselves to ensure that there are performance agreements and work plans that are signed off, both from a senior management level and also from level 1 to 12. And we currently instituting consequence management in terms of those that could not supply this. But some of them, there are real reasons why they couldn't supply, like people who at that stage when this was done were sick or were on maternity leave and others. So there would be those that would not be affected by this, but there would be good reason in terms of why action cannot be taken against those. We're also having intense discussions, as Honorable Chair would recall, that this draft integrated development finance is one of the plans that the portfolio committee would like to have instituted and coming in here. But there are two areas of importance. There's that comprehensive producer support policy that also touches on the integrated development finance, and therefore there is consultation on how to twin these two so that as we come here at the end of the financial year, we are able to report on those. But we are keeping an eye on this integrated development finance, which will be a broad brush attempt to ensure that whichever finance is used in the agriculture space, the agriculture, forest and fisheries space, is pinned on coordination from a policy perspective. And there's also a thought process that if the policy is there, we should also be looking at an act that would also assist us in this area. On the other challenges that are delaying the completeness of documentation that you are having, I think this one on audit is our own doing, Chair, that admission, because as we reported, our report on the audit committee was that the audit committee noted this. In essence, the audit committee was supposed to approve that, but as we meet on Friday at 2 o'clock, we will be able to then correct the minutes to reflect correctly, because in terms of M&E, the wording should be correct. In this one, we had indicated noted instead of approval. On the issues of enforcement regulations, we had challenges in terms of the internal approvals, but we are very sure that we'll be able to submit this to the DTI for further implementation by them, because that will deal with how we deal with the entire transformation of the sector. That there are certain systems that we need to put in place to ensure that there is preferential treatment of those people who were previously disadvantaged. I've already spoken around the issues of the 126 applications that we had on the website. And the other one on the which is an improvement scheme, we are currently sourcing additional funding. And it's very important because the Agricultural Research Council 2 weeks back held the beef award for the farmer. And it's one of those strategic issues where you start seeing the integration of the two sectors in terms of the black farmers and the commercial farmers coming together. And if we don't get money for Ghana for Trade Home, then we will be retrogressing in terms of the gains that we have done, especially around the ERC work on production and productivity in the space. Now, there were a few roadshows that would need to be undertaken to ensure that we also reflect on the number of households that we have supported over a period of time. Because from our roadshows that we have had the last time around, there was no simple template in terms of all provinces reporting the same. We are of the opinion that once the effect of these roadshows take place, we will be able to consistently report on what the provinces are achieving, and there will be alignment in terms of the way that the provinces are reporting. And that would also go for the smallholders that are supported, and the number of hectares that are being brought onto or to production. And this is in line with my initial introduction that the space in terms of reporting on numbers will also need to be coordinated better, because there are various numbers that are popping up in different avenues instead of a single number that government uses to report at different avenues. The other one would then deal with the Aquaculture Development Bill, where it was just an issue of providing evidence of our netlet process. That's something that we give attention to. And the other one, in terms of the finalization of rights, it has been an issue that has been broadly reported on to ensure that we finalize these small-scale fisheries cooperatives and also provide evidence in terms of the finalization of those rights. We will also look at this area of the monitoring around compliance and surveillance that is currently happening in the fisheries industry. That the information there would need to be verified, and we are very sure that once we have verified this, we will be able to report on the final product. And I am convinced that we will be able to achieve this, because there is currently Operation Pagisa initiatives that are currently happening in the fisheries industry, where there are joint programs between the department and other law enforcement units within government to ensure that there is compliance enforcement. On the emerging issues, there are only a few. We are currently busy with the cut-up biennial review. We have got information that has been consolidated coming from the industry, and the industry has been very proactive in terms of assisting with the information. We are currently addressing the issue of the information gaps that we are currently experiencing on these areas. And we are having a workshop on the 8th of September just to start dealing with the validation of the information, and we have had confirmation from industry to participate in terms of the validation of the cut-up biennial review. This review would then go to SADC, and from SADC it would then be submitted to the AU. This is the first time that we have got this biennial review that will be discussed at ministerial level, at AU level, and it presents us with an opportunity to then look at best practices across the African continent, and we can then clean those and localize them to the South African conditions. And we are very convinced that there are great stories that we will also get from the African continent to advance us, other than us only giving information. The next one would be on the outbreak of the highly pathogenic avian influenza, H5N8. Honorable members would know that we have got 24 confirmed outbreaks. There are a few suspects, I think, out there that are currently being handled. And it presents a very good case of a world state in terms of transboundary diseases, whether the world is ready in terms of the outbreaks that are here. This is not only a South African phenomenon. We have seen a few countries that have experienced this outbreak. And we have had discussions with the industry, where the industry would like to have vaccination recognized. There is currently a group that is working on the pros and cons of vaccination, and we expect that report to be available towards the end of September. There is also a system where the department has devised some clear guidelines in terms of how the compensation policy would work under the circumstances. And we hope that in the long run we will be able to then deal with the highly pathogenic avian influenza, because we have, as a resilient country, we have had outbreaks before that we have managed to work out. But what is very important is that we are now living in a real global village, and diseases, because of trade, because of movement, can move quicker and faster, and we need to be on the lookout, and we also need to have early warning systems across the continent, whether in SADC or at any level, to deal with transboundary diseases. The rest is an outline of where the outbreaks were up to the 23rd of August. In terms of disaster management, we reflect on our interventions coming to the fires that we experienced in Naisna, Black Timber Bay, and Mossel Bay, and honorable members were there to go through and see what happened during that particular time. All that is left for us is to finalize the report and our interventions as directed by this August House. We also make then a few observations in terms of where are we on human resources. We are currently having a vacancy rate of 11.7%. This vacancy rate should be looked at, honorable members, in line with the current ceiling that is being put on the department by National Treasury, because National Treasury is clearly alluding to the fact that we need to ensure that the public purse when it comes to compensation of employees is directed towards also services that we are having. So we are currently having an internal discussion on the current vacancies, and we will be able to report back after our strength planning session on the direction that we will be taking around this vacancy rate that we are experiencing within our sector. And we would like to report that this is going to be looked at in totality in terms of how the department is structured and how the department will structure from there going forward to ensure that the service is delivered on the ground. We also reflect on the staff age profile of the department. While this is almost a perfect bell curved shape in terms of the graph, we would like to highlight the danger that we are currently experiencing as a department. If we look at the ages between 50 to 54 and 55 to 59, you start realizing that you have got the majority of employees in that category. In actual fact, most of the employees in DAF are between 50 and 54. And that spells a danger in terms of HR planning and succession planning, because if you, in the long run, have got such a steep towards the people who are about to exit the system, it would mean that in terms of the 25s and 29s, you would have more people coming in that area in order to replace. And that's something that we will also be looking at in terms of our strategy planning session, to say how do we manage talent within the department and how do we attract talent and keep it, because in most instances you'll be able to attract talent but not keep it in terms of the incentivization of the area, not money wise but in different forms and shapes as allowed by the prescripts in government. We also highlighting the DAF SMS profile. And Honorable Chair, I know the passion that you have in terms of representation that you are having. The only good story that we can tell as a department is that we have got more women at level 14 than at any other level within the department. We hope that reflection would also go to level 15 and would also go to level 16 going forward. There are current opportunities that we are having in terms of vacancies, if the restructuring process would inform that, that we would like to give an assurance from our desk that we have to abide with our employment equity target as reflected on slide 30. Honorable Chair, if you allow me, I will request the CFO to quickly go through the expenditure trends that you are currently having. Before the CFO goes through those expenditure trends, I would like to paint a picture that from the departmental point of view, we use a simple system in terms of looking at quarters. We expected that at the first quarter we would have been at 25% spending, and that 25% spending would go through all the cost centers or the programs as we are having. There would be those programs that would overshoot that mark. There are reasons why they are overshooting, but there would also be those that are under, and we provide reasons for them. But what is very important in terms of our finances is that this year, if we don't do anything about the current personnel costs that we are having within the department, in line with the treasury ceiling that has been set, at the end of this financial year, we might find ourselves 15 million rand in the red as a department. We are not leaving it as a department to say there's nothing that we can do. There are a few interventions that we have identified in order for us to be within that particular area. Two critical areas, our area around economic development, trade and marketing, needs some attention, and also fisheries management in terms of our vessels controls. Those are the two critical areas. But when it comes to allocation of budget per APP targets, I think that we are doing well as a department. I will then, with your permission, Chair, also hand over to the CFO to give us an update on the expenditure trend.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Honourable Members. Good morning, colleagues. We are on slide 32. The total budget for the department for the 2017-18 year is 6.8 billion. The majority of it goes to agricultural production, health and food and safety, which is 2.1 billion. And then the next one is food security and agrarian reform, which is 1.9 billion. And then the next one would be forestry and natural resources management. In the first quarter, we have already spent 1.799 for out of the whole budget, which represents 26.7. I think the acting DG has already highlighted the areas around program 4 and program 6, which are trade promotion and market access and fisheries management. Then on slide 33, we are looking at our expenditure per economic classification. The honorable members are aware that most of the budget goes to transfers and subsidies, which is 3.7 billion, and then there's 2.1 billion which goes to compensation of employees, and then goods and services is at 807 million. Out of the total budget for compensation of employees, we are currently at 514 million, which accounts for 24%. For goods and services, we are at 29.7%, which is 240 of the 807 million. And then in terms of transfers and subsidies, we are at 1 billion, which accounts for 26.9%. Then on the next two slides, we indicate the reasons why we are not in line with our target. I think I also need to add to what Mr. Ramasodi has just said. In terms of the budget constraints that we have, when we reach, for the past 2 years, when we reach January, February and March, we are unable to pay most of our suppliers because we don't want to go into an overspending of budget, and as such, when we reach April of the next year, we had to pay for some of the suppliers, and then that also gets into the usage for the 2017-18 year. And then I would want to talk about slide, the one where we've got targets versus budgets. That is our actual versus budget, which is in slide 37. For program one, I will only touch on the totals if the chair can allow me. The total budget for program one, as per targets, we are at 902, And then what we have done is that 104 is allocated for targets, and for quarter one we have spent already 43 million for targets, and then the rest is for services that are rendered. As you might be aware, program one is made up of support programs. Then we get to program two. The budget is 2.197 billion, and the target, the total for target is 909. And then program two as well, I must indicate that is mostly service based. That's for our inspection services, quarantine services, and the actual that we have spent for the target so far is 150 out of the budget of 554. And then I want to move over to program three. Program three, the total budget is 1.9, and then the total that we have for the budget for targets is 951 million. In terms of spending, we are still low. In terms of spending, we are at 90 million against the budget of 310. Then we go to program four. Maybe I should touch on program five more than program four. Program four, Mr. Ramaswamy has already spoken about. Program five, we've got a budget of 1.016, and currently what we have spent out of that budget is 115, but for those that relates to targets, it's 45 million. Then we get to program six. The total budget is 482, and the actual for the current year is 258, and for the targets we are at 23 million. Now, if you look at the total picture for DAF, in terms of the total budget, 6.8, we have spent 1.6 billion. And out of that, 416 million is for targets. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. In conclusion, we are of the opinion that the 64% as achieved, having done preliminary assessment, and having even indicated that it's going to be better when we finalize the report as prescribed within the 90 days after the end of the quarter. We are aware that this is not what the department would have liked to achieve. We normally set our targets to go just on 80, but we are optimistic in terms of reaching that because of the provincial roadshows that we have had, because of the guidelines that we have coordinated with the issues that we have to deal with at intergovernmental level, and the working groups that we have set ourselves to coordinate the work that we are doing in order to aggressively strengthen coordination. We are aware, Chair, also that in terms of the sector itself, whether it's agriculture, forestry and fisheries, there are challenges that you are currently experiencing, but it's nothing that is insurmountable. We are working on solutions towards the challenges that we are having within the sector. And that concludes the report that we have prepared for the Portfolio Committee on this matter. This report is also accompanied by a full report, Honorable Chair, on the work that the department has done from the 1st of April 2017 to the 30th of June. Thank you very much, Chair, Minister, and Honourable Members.
Thank you very much, Acting DG and CFO. We welcome the presentation, and I'll invite Honourable Members to interact with the report as presented by the Department. Honourable Members, you can raise your hand. Honourable Hussein, Honorable Maloui, Honorable Chandan, Honorable Kapa, Honorable Apanga. Can start Honorable State. Let's, because we have other presentation that is coming in, let's have four questions for now. And then if we still have time, the target is to finish at 11:30 for this interaction. If we we've done well, we can have the other bites before the deliberation on the Liquor Act Product Bill Amendment. Honorable Stan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also welcome to the Minister. Chair, I'm very concerned about this quarterly report. It seems like, you know, we are in trouble. Reading through these documents and reading the reports, my concern is that especially if you look at the section dealing with food security and agrarian reform, where 0% of the targets have been met, only 15% of the budget has been spent what was supposed to be spent by that time. Looking on page 29, monitoring in agricultural land rehabilitated, 0. Number of projects revitalized on irrigation schemes, 0. It's all got to do with the primary function of producing food, Jefferson, and I'm really concerned that I don't know if it's a capacity thing or if something else is the problem. But if we can get maybe from the department or the minister, what is the especially on that program, food security? Why are we so low on all those targets? If we don't report on revitalization of irrigation schemes, monitoring of agricultural rehabilitation of land, all those things that need to be in place to ensure that farmers can farm productively. Chairperson, I'm also concerned that it's very difficult to read these reports. I want to refer the department to page 18, page 23, 28. There are many examples. I just mentioned them. Page 18, 23, 28 of the document, not the slide. There's just gaps there. You know, it says... go to that page as myself. Page 18. Number of plant animal diseases risk surveillance conducted. 2 animal risk diseases surveillance in 000. Above that, number of plant improvement schemes, which is quarter 1 monitoring report on seed crops and seed potato schemes has been compiled. Maybe that is not such a good example. The one that was the other page of 23. Extension practitioners deployed to commodity organizations, and then it just says nothing. National policy on comprehensive genetics says nothing. I find it quite difficult to read these reports, Chairperson, so I would like to make a proposal that we get the quarterly reports as submitted to Treasury, and I'm not sure if the department must also submit quarterly reports to monitoring and evaluation, so that we at least have some kind of a document to work with to establish for ourselves where is the problems and what is going on, because it's really very difficult to read these reports with so many dots and empty spaces in there. Chairperson, going to the department's...
You remember, Honourable Member, and we have agreed that the department must present the report as they presented in the not that one, not even in their presentation, because that's what we said, so we need to them to give us the target. Indicator whether the infection is met their target, if not, what is the problem, and what is the and what and we then requested them even to add the impact, which they've done in terms of the presentation. So I think this is the one that we must work on because it's the one that we've directed them to present.
Chairperson, then on the slides, I looked at the policy and strategic alignment, and under the section that speaks about the MTSF, there are 2 points there. The one is increase of percentage of ownership of productive land. How can we put it in there if then the policy at the current policy at the moment is not to transfer land ownership? I think maybe the minister must assist here because it's in a department official document to say increase percentage of ownership of productive land. So I don't know if this is even achievable, and we never report on that in any case. The reason why I'm asking this, Chair, when we went on our oversight, one of the biggest issues that the farmers had was the fact that they don't have even a lease agreement currently, and I think the department will report to us when we discuss that oversight report. And then, Chair, I think there was mention made about the reduction of rural unemployment, which I think we need to give some attention to. I'm very concerned with the latest stats where unemployment is actually rising or poverty is rising in rural areas specifically, so that we need to see if what the department and other department is doing is working. Chair, I would like to find out why do we only have 126 compulsory community service. I know what the answer was is how we're going to fill it up, but why do we only have 126? How many people applied in the beginning? Did they not make the year, or what is the reason for that? And I think when we put the target in the beginning of the year at least, we must know how many there are. And then maybe if they could give us a short discussion on bird flu, Chair. My concern is about all this wild birds that has been found positive in the last few months that were found. How do we deal with wild birds, Chair? Do we just pick up when birds died, or is there a testing for that happening all over the country so that we can pick up more cases sooner, or what do we do with the wild birds? And then lastly, Chair, slide 32 on disasters. I want to find out from the department what are we doing regarding drought. Some of our provinces are severely affected by drought. Again, we are aware of the Western Cape. We are not sure if everyone's so aware of the Northern Cape and then the Eastern Cape. And then even other parts of the country, I'm picking up reports of boreholes being dried up again. Are we monitoring the disaster of drought again and preparing something for that? Thank you, Chief.
Thanks, Chair. I suspect mine are comments instead of questions. Now, you will recall that when we're discussing your APP, one of the suggestions that we made there was that you must set the achievable and realistic targets. Because if you don't set achievable and realistic targets, you will come to the portfolio committee and report challenges all the time because your targets were not realistic. Now, and I'm worried about that. It seems we are still not using the SMART principle when we do our things. And I will advise that we must do so. Because if we don't do so, we are going to create problems. The expectation was that when you report in terms of your first quarter targets, those will be the targets that you know that you are going to achieve, you have budgeted for those, and so on. and then in this meeting you will report progress. And then if you go through your report, you are not necessarily reporting progress. There are challenges almost in each and every target that you have set for yourself. So I'm just saying we need to correct that thing. The second thing which I'm also worried about, Chair, you know, if you go to fisheries, the expenditure is at 53%, and I understand you have explained, it's at 53%. Targets achieved is at 29% for this quarter. And I suppose that they were supposed to be at 100% for a quarter, on quarterly targets, it's at 29% and so on. So I'm saying there are problems there which we'll need to attend to. And the other challenge which I'm having is that more often than not, the DDG for fisheries is not available. And it will be necessary that the DG for fisheries must be available in order for us to deal with this area and understand fully as to what are these challenges that are there and so on in order for us to deal with this matter once and for all. Because when you report as to why are you unable to achieve your targets, why are there challenges and so on, you are talking about systematic delays. Systematic delays. To me, that is just English. Because you need to explain fully as to what is causing this specific problem. Why are we not achieving it? Is it because of resources? Is it because of personnel? What exactly is it? Because when you talk systematic challenges, I don't know what are those systematic challenges and so on. So we'll have to deal with that aspect. But also related to that, you know, the CFO says, normally around January, you are unable to pay suppliers. So you are then forced to pay them in April and so on and so forth. So which means also then is a problem in terms of your budgeting. It means we are not budgeting properly. That is why we are having these problems. It means we have to budget properly in order to ensure that we are not having this problem which he's talking about. Because very soon we'll be talking accruals and so on, which will affect the performance of this department and so on. But maybe just the last point which I might want to raise as a question. If fisheries is at 59%, 53% expenditure, are you foreseeing over expenditure in that directorate? I don't know whether to call it a directorate or an entity and so on, but what are you foreseeing? We are in the first quarter. We are at 53% expenditure and achievement only 29%. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, I want to add on to what Honorable Maloya said. It is hugely worrying that, you know, the Fisheries Management Department is the worst performer in all this in all these departments on that we are dealing with today. It's spent 50% of and more of its budget in the first quarter, and it's only reached 29% of the targets for this quarter. And it looks like the Fisheries Department is a repeat offender. It happened last year. We asked you, what is going to happen? How are you going to deal with it? They said, no, it's not going to be a problem. Next year we will do better. But here we are again. And it's the same story. It doesn't look like there's any change. You know, it looks like the delinquent child in this family. Why is this so? And DG, what are you going to do to turn this around? Because in the end, it's your responsibility to bring everybody in line and to make sure that they stay within budget and on target and reach their target. I mean, you can't you can delegate your responsibility or your authority, but not your responsibility. So it stays your responsibility, and you need to tell us what you are going to do to turn it around. And then the department is also in court all the time, you know, and they are. And the Viking Fishing case is a point in case. It is where the company took them to court, and then Viking Fishing actually lost the case. But then they got their quota back because the delegated authority didn't take a rational decision. Her decision was overturned, and in the end, they kept their quota. So how does that happen? Who pays for that? Do we pay for it now, or who pays for that? Do they have to pay for it? Because in the end, it seems like a zero-sum game. They take them to court, they lose the court case, but they keep their quota. I don't understand that. And then what happened to the Hawks report that was prepared for this committee? And it was dealing with the rife corruption in the Department of Fisheries. I think that's a point where we should start, to see if we can get to the bottom of the corruption where Mr. Desmond Stevens and Fredericks are implicated in. And I think we should start at that point and find out what is going on there. It can't be that the report gets on the agenda and then it just disappears again. I want to deal with that. And then can you give us an update on the fishing rights allocation process? And why is there so much unhappiness with our fishermen that everybody wants to run to court to overturn the decisions of the delegated authority? And I've told them before, you know, after that case and most of the cases, they will win those court cases. Who's going to pay for all those court cases? And this thing, now I hear that you run over budget and you don't pay your suppliers. Where does this come from? It can't work like that, that you are punishing people that are supplying you with late payments. Some of these companies are smaller companies. They rely on that money. They will go bankrupt if you don't pay them. And then who's going to serve you next year? You can't run over budget and then not pay your suppliers. You have to pay your suppliers. That must be your first responsibility. So you can't let them wait a year for their money. And then I see on the report they talk about 39 operations that cost 112 million rand on page 42. I would like to know what those operations are. If somebody could explain that, please. Thank you.
Honorable
thank you, Chair. Just a few brief light ones. And on slide 14, there was a mention of the launch of this food security and nutrition interventions. I'll just like to have a feeling there that these interventions, do they have an impact, or is there an indication that they are going to achieve the purpose and intention? And on slide 16, as a mention of the development of policy on animal identification and traceability, I was under the impression that there has been this animal identification processes, the ad being there, and I remember that at some stage, I think this more than 6 years ago, that there has been a software that you use DNA for this traceability. But now, when there's this policy, does it mean that such things were going on without the policy, or that they, but I think EFSA was involved there without the policy, or what is the link and the relation between this policy, the policy that is proposed, and existing practices in the animal identification and traceability? And the last one is a relation between the decrease in post-establishment and increase in the vacancy rate. And now the last one will be a comment, because on this last one, I think that's what also Honorable Fandale has touched, that while we talk about the challenges and then we have reasons, I would like to get more emphasis on the proposed solutions that indicate that you will be able to overcome these challenges that you have highlighted, so that if you say you have your why and your because and end up with your therefore, this and ABCD will happen. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Let me start with the, because this is the first quarter report, Honorable Members, just to remind some of you. When we deal with the APP of the department, the DGN minister, we said that the issue of commercialization of black farmers, 450 is not appearing, and you have to correct or make inputs in your APP. The second issue was that the implementation plan on the APEP and the revitalization of agriculture, your input in that regard, what will be the input of the department? And the other issue was the irrigation development on the number of hectares per MTFS in state of project. The other issue was the rationale for increasing CCS vets placement to 150. That was a discrepancy in your APP. And the issue of the market access to smallholder farmers producers. Lastly, the issue of transformation. These are the issues that we said they need to be incorporated into the APPs. And DG, when you start reporting, I thought you would give the reason why they have not been tabled or submitted as an addition on the APPs. So maybe if you can clarify this one part, so that we are able to monitor the APP correctly. The second issue, which is the outstanding issues which are supposed to recur into your plan, is the finalization of mechanization policy. And I've seen that one of the presentations that you have made to us was on the funding for census of smallholder farmers, register for smallholder farmers, which you said that we're clapping hands that the Treasury has given you the funding. But these issues are not actually appearing on your report, because when you report on the first quarter, it doesn't mean you must leave those issues that way, because these are a caring program that's supposed to come within this quarter. The issue of integrated support and financial support, which for me goes, they must go, come together, because they're supposed to address the plight of the small producers. I'm very worried that the slow pace that we are moving in. Because, by the way, we have said that we must drag this in, fast track this in. The slow pace, it shows that you want to go to your initial planning, which is worrisome. On fisheries, just to talk on legislation, I heard the Honorable Fandal was saying DDG, it's your responsibility. I'm not sure those people were doing that act. What were they thinking? You know, every official is given mandate by the legislation. If you go through that legislation, and DG is not featuring anyway, and now we want him to account for those things. I think it's high time that those are, because it's even mentioned DDG, you have the chief director, you have even the officials that are mentioning the legislation. I've never seen such a legislation. You know, when I was going through that legislation, I got frustrated. Is it members of parliament who amended these things like that? It's one of the things that I was raising, that we should avoid naming, giving individual members or individual staff to perform performance in the legislation. Because if that official is not perform, you can't hold DG responsible. You said the delegation goes to the DDG, and his role, DDG, is only on the allocation of price, and then it gives the chief director's mandate of the management, goes even to directors. So we have created problems ourselves in that regard, which is something that we have to relook at that legislation. And which means that, Minister, because in this regard you are the executing authority and responsible person in the fishery, you have to put your hands on deck on fishery, particularly to make sure that those that are mentioned in legislation, they are performing their task. As we way to amend or to look at the legislation itself. And in near future, DG, what you can do for this committee is to bring all those that the Act says they must do certain things to here in this committee for them to come and account on their role. On that. Actually, we'll have the session to deal with fishery in the process. You just have to hang on the Honorable Fandame because other programmers must other issues on the agenda must look at balancing our work and make sure that we are within the parliamentary framework in terms of dealing with the court. You know that by quarter I must receive this report, quarterly report only. On the first quarter, that's why you have the second quarter, the third quarter, and the fourth quarter. So, as you put things, as that time arrives, you will have to put those that are within the framework to come first before the agenda. But we are going to have a session. So the minister will have to bring all those people who are having responsibilities to perform in fishery would have to come here and give feedback on issues of fishery. I'm not saying you must not answer. I'm just saying we want to talk to those people who the Act is mentioning what they were supposed to be their responsibility, and they must tell us why there is no performance in terms of the targets as indicated by your report, that the performance is very low. And the focus, obviously, where there is a, it's like supply chain. You have a lot of tenders to go out, supersede everything. The people are focusing on making sure that the tenders are going out, not doing their job. I think we would have to get that opportunity to interact. So those are the issues. And before you go into questions, the correction that we have raised on the APPs, why are not incorporated or whether you, and then the second issue is those recurring things that are supposed to be within the agenda, your report, your silence on them. Minister, and welcome. I'm not sure you want to first take the bite before
you... Yes, Chairperson, I'm taking my responsibility on fisheries. But I will start with answering some of the questions raised by Honorable Steyn.
when she mentioned the issue of draft, we have met with the industry. Our last meeting was 2 weeks back on Tuesday in Johannesburg under the auspices of the agribusiness. And we outlined the zones and areas where there's drought. We reported in cabinet the fact that some money has been put up for the Western Cape around NYSMA. So it can be true that nothing has been done. Work has already been done. I'm not saying you said so. I'm saying that something has been done. On the issue of white birds and the pathogenic bird flu influenza, what we must accept is that this disease has been ravaging Europe, Americas, and the rest. It is difficult to instill boundaries for birds because they are migratory. We became aware of this disease in Zimbabwe around the 2nd of June. And in no time, it showed itself in Mpumalanga. And there are a number of things that we have outlined as a department, more on control measures. What farmers should do, biodiversity, make sure that there is no water resources close to farms are monitored, not to allow chicks to mingle with birds, because it's how it is transmitted. A number of hobby birds that must be taken into account as well. And how people must ensure that even when you visit a farm and all those stuff, must make sure that we control. But it was that part until one of the affected stakeholders presented a proposal for the need to look at vaccination. And because it was a new measure in South Africa, we agreed that a team of experts must meet on that. And that's the report that we are waiting for, that we are going to check, because we should do a check whether this has assisted globally. It may reduce the fatalities, but the question is, what else may come out of it? So that is part, one part, but I want to make sure that we do meet with the stakeholders. Our last meeting was a week ago, and last week we had a press conference, because it's a part of informing people to say, these are the issues you need, so that we don't create a panic. But also, we would like to make sure that it is understood that nobody can declare this avian flu on the basis of birds dying. It must only be declared as such after samples are taken by our veterinarians and taken to a laboratory. We don't want to create a panic that when 2 or 5 dies, then you say it is this disease. And you are aware of the strain it causes. And there's been a proposal to allow an importation of fertilized eggs. But that is also under discussion. So there's discussion between us and the affected parties, and we're looking at all the proposals. Coming to the issue that has been raised by Honorable from Dalem on fisheries, why are we always in court? This question would be more like asking a person, why are you in court when you are not the initiator? Let me clarify first as to why were we taken to court by, what was the argument of the company that took us to court? It was not on quotas. What the argument was is that the department should not be allowed to allocate quotas, but we should continue with the program of allocating what was previously allocated. Thus, their challenge was based on that. And the argument seems to say that when there is a difference between what the delegated authority has given and what the appeal team did, therefore it shows that there was some kind of, I don't know what language you used, but a great doubt, but it's not true, sir. It's not true, sir. Let me tell you this, it's not true. It shows one thing, that there are two distinct operations. And which is which, you were supposed to ask the companies, why did you go to court without following the internal procedures? Which are those that after you have not got what you wanted, you appeal? Before the appeal was finalized, the company went to court. Why did they went to court? It is because they have not trust in the systems that we're having as a department. It has nothing to do with whether the the DA, not the DA as a party, but the delegated power or authority would have done her work. And I'm happy because what that report has showed is that they're not only the only ones, by the way, who received a revised quota, no. Because the weighting they used was not the same as the department was using. But nonetheless, you are not mentioning the fact that even when they got what they wanted, they still went to court to appeal. The issue was not about the quota then, it is something else. So, the thing when we met last week with them, I asked them to come back and tell whether they believe that they have got the right to fishers. Ours is to a ref with no right to do anything. I asked them to go back because, to me, fisheries belong to the state. That should be allocated to its citizens. And transformation must form part of that. So let me apologize, Chairperson, on the absence of the DDG fisheries. We are having a case of benches. Another case of illegal fishing by our own companies. Who fished our fish, who took it to America, fraudulently, who made money. When they were found guilty, we have already got some payment already. That this week in New Jersey, we'll follow each and every company who fishes in our waters. Illegal issue. We're even looking at the issue of what is called the bycatches. We're aware that companies apply for the less lucrative species so that they can harvest what they think is more lucrative. We're going to put measures that for every fish you cash your account. So already, Honorable, we have met with the companies. We have agreed that there will be committees to meet to look at the 2020 allocations. We are going to start that in time. We'll make sure that everybody is clear. But transformation should be the basis on which we work. Black people cannot continue to be in the periphery of fishing. There must come a time when everybody in this country has a right to fish. That also raises the right of foreign vessels to be in our waters, as they are competing in Namibia with foreign companies. Why is this selectively not allowed in the country? So we have debated that with them. So we are going to meet again. So the issue of fishing rights allocations is being dealt with. And we want to make sure that by the time those rights are allocated, everything is done. Our systems are ready to do that. But any allocation that does not take into account the transformation will not be fulfilling the agenda of government to transform all our entities. I've taken note of the comments made by the chairperson on the issues of people who are given delegated powers to come and report. We'll make sure that such is done. On the issue of corruption in the department, it is not only limited to, as it is officials we have mentioned, Mr. Honorable Van Dalen, but it is also companies. There's a case we are following up. And the ones who have done that case, we are going to come back and comment and report. Food Corp is a case in point. How rights of communities were taken away, camouflaged as an acquisition. Processes went very horrible wrong. People lost out. We will make sure that we come back and report. We'll follow due processes. The report of the Competition Commission will be sought. Fisheries has to make sure that people are not only looking at fisheries as a commercial fisher, but also as the ocean providing food for communities along the fisheries sector. So I think those were the issues that you raised. I want to say that Viking didn't go to court on the basis that they were questioning their location. What they were looking for was that the department should not be allowed by court to issue any fishing rights, but rather we should be doing what we have been doing before the policy was in place. Hence, they went to appeal, notwithstanding the fact that they got an extra allocation after appeal.
Honourable Chair, I would start off with the issues that the Chair raised in order for us to depart on that slate. The issues that the Chair raised would find maybe a response in terms of how the APPs are outlined. Each and every APP would be broken down into milestones, and that would also answer what Honourable Steyn was raising. And these milestones would then be reported on a quarterly basis. So at some quarters, you would not have things to report within that particular line. And it would also go into the report as outlined to say that there are areas like disease surveillance that you would report only after two quarters, you then report in terms of your findings. But specifically to what the Chair raised issues that were to deal with the APPs. Firstly, the commercialization of the 450 farmers, the implementation plan for APAP and RAVAC, the irrigation plans increasing CCS beds to 150 to deal with the disparity between what we had presented in the APP and what was in the ENE, and then lastly, issues around market access. All those issues, Chair, were dealt with by the department in the form of an addendum to the APPs that was shared with the DDGs responsible for those programs. But I think the greatest omission that was made in the process, as I've just even indicated, was that these were not even brought to the Honourable House for them to be looked at, but they are there. For the amendments were made in terms of this. And our commitment is that, as they have been highlighted, we will then also, in the second quarter, report on this. The other one, Chair, was around the finalization of mechanization, the mechanization policy. Chair would recall that there was an agreement within Parliament that we need to consolidate all this into the consumer support policy. Including the mechanization policy. And Chair is concerned with the slow pace at which we are moving within the policy itself. But what we'd like to indicate is that we have actually fast-tracked it. If Chair looks at the work breakdown structure, which we can share with honourable members, is that we have compressed the work that needs to be done, that consultations and everything will be done and concluded during the time frames as set by the portfolio committee. And therefore, we are going...
Before you proceed, I think I must clarify the issue of mechanization policy. You remember you said that because you are developing this policy, but in the meantime, there are problems on the ground. The policy was meant to assist provinces in terms of making sure that there is similarities with mechanization. So I just wanted to clarify that that's why it's outstanding.
Thank you, Chair, for the clarity. We will look at it as a department and make that report available for the mechanization as a standalone. Chair, there was also an issue around the funding for the census. We will also provide a report on that one. There has been some indications from our engagements with Statistics SA on how the census should be rolled out for us to be sure that we can manage what we know is on the ground. Chair is right in terms of the framework of the Fisheries Act, and I think I would also go to what Honourable Maloyi was raising to say all the things that he had raised are correct. In terms of the comments that would be there going to the SMART principles and dealing with matters as they were. Now, in terms of what the CFO had raised, we also agree, Honourable Maloyi, that if we cannot pay on time, then we're raising an even bigger monster in terms of accruals for the department. That is why the focus in terms of our executive meetings these days is how to deal with the budget issues of the department. Because in the long run, the department, while this year we have got an unqualified audit, if we continue at the rate at which we are going, I think that we will be qualified. In fact, I am sure that we will be qualified. qualified. So we're dealing with issues around financial management in the department. And that goes to what Honorable Van Dalen had raised to say, oh, what are we doing or what am I doing as the acting DG in terms of this? I've really put some time in terms of setting up governance frameworks that would be accountable in terms of how we utilize the services within the department. Secondly, also looking at the issues that we're having where we have got budget shortfalls, where we reprioritize within the department to see how can we spend money elsewhere in terms of the areas that are of importance to us. You would look at the current report that you are having, that there is that financial and fiscal discipline that is being practiced within the department, except for those areas that are there. And it's not to say that areas like fisheries are irresponsibly spending on issues that are there. It's because of the initial gross underfunding. But we accept that gross underfunding does not guarantee or give you the opportunity then to utilize money outside of the confines of the PFMA. But we are working on ensuring that there's good spending within the department. If you look at last year's budget, you'd realize that there has been a 2% creep from the previous year into this year in terms of the budget itself. Those are the things that we are currently working on to say that in line with good budgeting and utilization processes, we are able to say at the end of a financial year, we have paid off whoever is there, and we are within the spending time frames. We also normally report at different levels, including at the audit committee. We report on how we pay our service providers and how we perform as a department in terms of the 30-day rule that has been put there. And until such time that the CFO is reflecting, we have been one of the departments that can pay within that particular time frame, except when we have got budget pressures. There were issues that were raised specifically from Ms. Stein in terms of ownership of land. Honorable Stein, you would recall that there are a few policy documents and strategy documents that talk around land ownership. The NDP itself talks about land ownership, the revitalization of agriculture and agro-processing value chains. If you look at the four areas that we're looking at, it's land ownership. The issues that are there might be issues how implementation is done. But what I know is that in order for one to procure collateral, you can have the right to use that particular land, not really ownership per se, but the right to use the land in order for you to get the money to use for production. But the real issue in terms of the policy space is ownership of land. On the reduction of rural employment, government is working in tandem to achieve the outputs of outcome 4, and all government departments that are involved in terms of those would include agriculture, forestry and fisheries, rural development and other departments to ensure that outcome 4 is achieved that deals with employment through the sectors. You would know that the target is to reduce that rural unemployment and to make rural spaces habitable areas. Why do we have 126 students? Those are the students who passed at the faculty during this particular time. And the supplementation of these students would also come from the foreign nationals who would come and practice here in South Africa in terms of the veterinary regime. The two issues that were raised around the wild bits, Minister has responded to that, and he has also responded to the issues around the drought. Honorable Malui, whether we oversee that we will have over expenditure within the department, we are managing the system to ensure that we don't have over expenditure, and we are also observing the areas around how to have tighter fiscal controls within the department. But it's going to be a touch and go issue. because honorable members would know that the department's budget was cut, and unfortunately there are a few essential services that we cannot do without that we are currently pushing. What we are doing, like I indicated, is to reprioritize and see whether we cannot plug those gaps with money on services that we think will not be rendered or are not essential for this particular period. Minister has dealt with the Viking issues, I think it's critical that I respond also to the issues raised by Honorable Kapa on the animal identification and traceability in terms of what is the link between them. Honorable Kapa, if you look at the framework that we have been having around animal identification, you would broadly have two systems that have been running. Animal identification that has been meant for the smallholders, assistance farmers, that really dealt with identification in the form of branding or sometimes in the form of ear tagging just to identify those animals. And on the commercial side, you would have very advanced systems like Intergis that you have already alluded to that are there. But this areas that we have been attempting to bring together have never been brought together in a policy framework. You would know that there is an act that deals with branding and there's an act that deals with animal improvement, which then links to intelligence. All that this policy is doing is bringing them together to ensure that as we try and build livestock in South Africa, there's a common place that ties everything together to say that this policy will be assist us in terms of identification, but it also assist us in terms of traceability, because in most instances you would have cattle that are stolen and your branding is just taken off, or at some other places people would even cut off ears if you have identified them in that way. So the policy is trying to bridge that particular gap that we are dealing with. The other area that was raised is a food security and nutrition issue, and that Msomi would respond to that one. And there is an issue around the relationship between a decrease in the vacancy rate within the department that I will deal with after that Msomi responds to the issues around food security and nutrition, a question that emanated from Honorable Kapa.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members, Minister, and Acting DG and colleagues. On the question from Honourable Kapa, this committee is called its duty is to coordinate the food security intervention. It is interventions. It is composed. It's coordinated by DAF. It is composed of Department of Social Development, which deals with the grants, Department of Basic Education, which deals with the 9 million school and nutrition program, also deals with the public works, that deals with jobs, COCTA, that deals with free basic services, and gardens, DAF, rural development. So this helps that we sit together, we coordinate these interventions, because we are all working under Outcome 7, which deals with the rural development and food security. So it helps us so that we can better target our interventions like Versa Dala, so that we are able to target the poor of the poor. I think that is the purpose of this committee. This committee has been launched now under the new policy that has been approved by Cabinet and part of the plan. In January, we had the food security in Naba, where we had both the government and the NGOs nationally. So this is the rolling out, making sure that as government we target our initiatives. That's how we are coordinating. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Msomi. Chair, the Honorable Kapa also asked a question around the relationship between the vacancy rate and the post-establishment of the department. What we normally did as a department is that there is a committee within the department that looks at the post-establishment. If there are posts that we deem to be not important in terms of our service delivery, and they are weakened. We at times have got a way of then turning them into or even advancing the money to critical areas of spending within the department where we create other posts. So there would be a view that when the department started during the amalgamation, if my memory serves me well, there were in the excess of 7,000 posts, and we have been able to reduce those number of posts by looking at the non-critical posts, abolishing them, creating other critical posts, or even abolishing where the needs arise. So based on our discussions, next week we might have a totally different kind of a post establishment based on the needs that we will start identifying from that element. And in the past, what we also did was that in order to manage the post establishment and this ceiling, it would go to that level where you have got to say, is this post critical for us to deliver our services? If not, then we will have to abolish some of the posts that we are having within the post establishment. But that does not necessarily leave us in the ledge, because we can even create posts in the areas where we have got critical needs within the department. There was a question around, I think Honorable Van Dalen had asked a question that we might have missed around the FREP process, that we have got in the absence of the DDG, we have got an acting DDG, Mr. Demani Simudi, who is the Chief Director of Aquaculture, to respond to the FREP process to date. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Minister and Honorable Members, colleagues. I will talk to the question around the status for the fisheries rights application process to date. And at the moment, the West Coast Rock Lobster applications were closed yesterday, and we have currently opened the inshore West Coast Rock Lobster appeals, and they will be dealt with as soon as possible. The Hague inshore trawl, the appeals were finalized. The Patagonian two fish, the appeals will also be announced soon. When it comes to the horse mackerel, we are currently busy with the appeals as well. One fishery that is still outstanding is the abalone, commercial abalone. And this fishery, the department decided for now to issue a one-year exemption. The reason being that we want to embark on a more strategic management approach towards the fishery, because this particular fishery is facing some serious pressure due to overfishing, poaching, and those illegal activities. So we want to make sure that once we allocate long-term rights, this could then be sustainable in the long term, because at the moment the fishery is under severe pressure. I think I would just like to add to what the DG mentioned regarding the issue of the revenue. We have approached National Treasury to re-look at the fishing levies and the fees, because the last time the fishing levies and the fees were reviewed was in 2009. That's about 8 years ago. In considering the issues around inflation, the increased operation costs, we think that it's necessary for us maybe to relook at whether those fishing levies are still appropriate. And that would then talk directly to the issue of the over expenditure in terms of quarter one, the 51% expenditure. The reason being that first quarter, that's when we have most of our operations when it comes to fishing patrols as well as the research cruises. We have some of our important research cruises during that period. Hence, the budget is becomes severely under pressure in that period. I think there was another question on the 39 operations as well. These are sea-based vessel patrols where we patrol and inspect various fishing activities out at sea.
And this is one of the contributors to the over expenditure for the quarter one. Thank you, Honourable Members.
Honourable Chair, that would conclude the responses that we had for the Portfolio Committee. We would like to raise that the report that we have presented might present the areas around challenges. And that is only 36% in terms of the report that we are presenting. The 64% was achieved. So the 36 is the one that we are making sure that there is remedial action towards achieving those. And as indicated, this is a preliminary report in terms of the framework. The final report will be available as at the end of September. And we think based on the evidence that we will accrue from different areas, we'll be able to report more than 64% achieved. Thank you, Chair.
I'll give those, I'll prioritize those that have not spoken if they want to, and then allow members to have another bite. Two questions, if you share.
Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. Chair, I have a follow-up.
You have the platform,
No, I think I have the follow-up question.
Okay, yes, but I must recognize you, Honourable Member. You can talk, actually, because you have not spoken before.
Thanks for that opportunity. Chair, on slide 28, with regard to human resource, Chair, it has been indicated that the vacancy rate increased from 10% to 10.5% to 11.7%. I just want to find out what are the reasons for the increased vacancy rate. Then the second one, Chair, it's on slide 24, where it relates to the PHA H58N outbreaks in South Africa. Chair, I think this outbreak, it has victimized the commercial farmers as well as the emerging or the smallholders farmers. Just to find out from the department if anything been done to assist them to this loss in terms of maybe the compensation. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think the Minister did speak about the bird flu outbreak, but my question was directly related to how testing is done for wild birds. Do we only pick it up in the wild birds after the birds have died, or do we actually physically go out there and search for them? I think there was a discussion about it the first time, but my concern is about the manpower being able to go out and look for. So I would like to see the practicality of how does it happen, the search for the wild birds. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Just on something that the DDG for aquaculture has just raised now, and that is that these fishing patrols and research usually get done earlier in the year, and that's why the budget looks like it's overexpended. So if you budget, and I mean, you set targets, you know that things are going to get spent, then you should budget accordingly, and then your targets should have been met. But what has happened here is that the targets are not met, so the budget is spent. So I don't buy that that excuse that you had tried to give us. And then on the other issue that I wanted to talk about was on the FRAP issue. Whenever I ask questions on FRAP and on the West Coast rock lobster, the minister keeps telling us about the big companies. I'm talking about the 800 fishermen
that have had quotas in our communities. Those are the fishermen that have now lost the quotas. Those are the people that don't have an income now. I'm not talking about a big company or anything else. I'm talking about those fishermen that were born into fishing families. And then they are also not white ministers. They are mostly of our colored community in Cape Town, in the Western Cape. And these are the people that have now lost their livelihoods according to the decisions the delegated authority have taken. So I just want to put something straight that I'm not talking about the big companies. If I'm talking about the 800 people that are now not having fishing quotas. And how do you transform something that has already been transformed in that issue? The West Coast rock lobster previously, it has been 80% transformed in the previous round. So now you say you want to transform something that was transformed already. I would like to know what you have to say about that and what your answer to those communities would be in Austin and Hermanus and Lamberts Bay and those people that now can't go out to fish. So those are the two issues I want to raise now.
The issue of monitoring and evaluation, one of the things that we have raised was that because in your CAF allocation there is a funding for what do you call them? Practitioner, the new name for no the new names for this extension officers. Yes, the new name, they're practitioner. No longer. practitioners. And we're saying that there is a cash money that is allocated to capacitate this group. And if you look at your EM monitoring and evaluation, you've been complaining that you don't have staff, and we're asking a question. Why this extension officers? Because they are being budgeted and capacitated by the national department. Why are they not becoming your resource on the ground? Because they are supposed to be on project every day. Therefore, if those people, there is a better arrangement with the provinces, there is no need for us to have delays in terms of reporting by provinces. And and we can then have accurate report on the project. And the second issue that they need even to be trained as project managers, so that they can report based on the project as it unfolds, not on the basis of just reporting. I remember we've raised this issue. Just to check the confirmation that we are looking into that direction, because for us to say to us you don't have capacity of monitoring your project when you have extension officers, it's something else. It's not accurate information. Another thing?
Chairperson, yes, I forgot also the minister answered me on the drought, and I know that there's meetings taking place. My concern is, and that acting DG knows that I'm phoning regularly, these things are not declared. The discussions maybe take place, but the problem lies in the provinces where there is drought on the ground, but it's not declared. So I want to find out what is the influence or the scope of the department to assist with getting droughts declared in certain provinces or districts. And Chairperson, I actually sit with a letter from the from a discussion that was held in the Eastern Cape in the district, where the Department of Water and Sanitation actually said they can't get the drought declared there because then the people will expect something and they don't have funding for that. So that is my concern that I'm having. There's a problem out there. Departments are not moving on the clearing areas, the drought disaster area, and I want to find out specifically, and I know, and I think farmers are thankful for what happened in the Western Cape, but what is happening in the Northern Cape and the Eastern Cape where drought has been prolonged and ongoing for the last few years, but it's not declared the drought disaster area. Where does it lie? Who is responsible for that? So I know the discussions is happening with industry and role players, but on the ground and in the departments, there's no movement.
Chair Minister.
Thanks. Let me start with the question or the issue that was raised by Honorable Mapanga on compensation. In the last meeting with stakeholders, especially the companies that have been affected, the issue of clarity as to who should be compensated and the policy that was raised. And our department was to come up with a clear policy and also to assist as to how do you access the compensation. But just remember that when you budget, we don't budget for disasters. We don't have that funding currently. Hence, we have approached different departments, including the finance department, so that some funds may be made available. But I was dealing now only with the fact that at the time when this happened, there was no clarity as to how people will. Of course, we understand that when because in dealing with this outbreak, one of the methods used is to destroy the carcasses of those chickens. In some instances, it runs into thousands as well as eggs, and manage the residue thereof. So it is costly to farmers. But on the issue of Honorable Van Dalen, you cannot separate. The first question you asked, why is it costing the state so much? Why don't we budget? I will give you a similar industry, the mining company. If you want to mine gold, you apply for a license to do exploration. You pay for the processes and everything. Only in fisheries is the state supposed to pay for all these high cost levels of patrols and the rest to identify the fish that is available. For the commercial part to come and claim that it is theirs. That is, to me, one misnomer we need to deal with in the country. To say, if they have to harvest the fish that the state has identified, what becomes the cost to them? Only in dealing with the issue of scientific research. But it is not argument enough. I am aware of the issue you are raising. Let's take the fact that there was a court judgment that declared that the state should have a small-scale fisheries. There was no fish set aside for that. We have to find a fish basket that may comprise of one or two other fish species that were in the hands of some of the people you referred to, who are the local community members. I agree. I never used the issue white. I only refer to the fact that as we speak today, unless I'm corrected, all the commercial vessels and companies are owned by white companies. I may be wrong, but I'm saying that, broadly speaking, of the five major fishing companies, predominantly, are owned as such. And the black people are not allowed even to a vessel. If you have got a quota, you must apply so they fish for you and they give you a dividend. It is what we are sitting with, Honorable Van Dalen. That you must accept and deal with if you want to find harmony within our fishing industry. But the issue you are raising is true. And we are busy engaging the communities. Because there are two ways of those people, I mean, benefiting. They may be having a quota for the the fish species you refer to. But when we issue the small-scale fisheries basket, they will be in those communities. The other benefit as belonging to a co-op, which would do fish processing, or they become part in terms of the fishing. Some of the issues that were raised were the issue of age. At 65, I wonder if you can be able to actively participate in fishing. That's not the issue I'm raising. I'm saying that we're dealing with it because if we're not to do anything about those people who are owning those huge quantities of fish, then we would not be able to fulfill the court decision that we need to allocate as a small-scale fisheries policy, because there would have been no other fish available to do that. And I can assure you that we had a meeting with the community for organizations. We will be going to communities to explain that you will benefit what price. We did not take the 80% of the fish that was up. We have changed that. So at least there is some fish allocated to those people as per our policies. But they will participate as well in the small-scale fisheries. One thing we are not debating, which I think is one way that has created unemployment in fishing, and I'm sure you will agree with me that in most of the fishing areas, there is no fish processing. Companies have been allowed to centralize their processing, not to process where they fish, leaving those communities unemployable and creating unemployment. And I'm sure there are many of those towns on Agufandali. We need to, because it is injustice to me to catch fish in a village, in a location. And that fish is taken to Cape Town to suit the interests of the company. And in the process, we're losing out because some of the heavy, big vessels that do their own processing deep sea are throwing away some of the very important components of that fish, like intestines that can be used to manufacture liquid fertilizer, as well as bones that can be used in the fish meal industry. So we're destroying jobs. We need to agree that there are changes we need to. I'm not fighting with commercial farmers. I may appear to be, and I meet with them, and I always say to them, once you transform willing, you cannot justify that when a black person gets a fishing quota, you will fish for him. You do the marketing for him, and you lock him into an indefinite debt. Thanks.
I think, Minister, the issues that you are raising, they are more on debate. I think in the next session, we'd appreciate if you can avail yourself and we discuss issues and establish a common understanding in terms of what is it that needs to be changed and what is it that have to be corrected, and so that honourable members they are with you, because I'm one of those that I'm missing you somewhere, but I don't want us to debate it right now.
Honourable Chair, with your guidance on fisheries matters and the need for a session on those, I would think that we will then utilize that opportunity to respond to some of the fisheries issues that were raised here. And we'll only give attention to the issues that were raised. Honourable Mapanga, the issue on outbreaks has been dealt with. The issue around the reasons for increased vacancies. We had retirements, we had promotions, and we had resignations, so within the department. But what is very important in terms of the filling of the vacancy part of it was that there is a concerted effort to look at the broad post-establishment within the department to see what are the structural alignments that we can do in order to make the department to deliver on the services that has been set aside. But those are the three issues why we have got those. The reason why we haven't been able to fill them up are the reasons that we are looking forward to a session where we are going to see what is the most suitable way of delivering services within the department, and especially around the essential services. On the issues around mess stain, I think I've been looking for an answer for you. Around, do we do something around wild bees? And this reminds me of the Dr. Songane would find a way of putting it in an easier way to say it becomes very difficult to then do surveillance around wild bee populations because there's always a new incursion that comes into the country, especially looking at the migratory part of the base part of it. You have raised it, but the current system that we are using is a reactive system where you see populations that demising populations, then you take samples and then you deliver them for them to be checked. So we are using a reactive system currently as government. The next one would be the one that came from the Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, we're still working on an integrated system. I know that you raised the issue, Honorable Marie raised the very same issue, that monitoring evaluation should be a seamless system that starts with an extension practitioner and government at national level doing certain areas just to ensure that there is that framework. And our commitment at the last meeting was that once we are done with that framework, we'll bring it here for approval and even advice from the portfolio committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
On the answer to the question by Honorable Anastasia. It is really a difficult one when birds, because, but I agree, and the issue you have raised. But what we have done with fall armyworm, we will extend to this, because remember, it was Zimbabwe who picked it, and I'm sure other countries in the region picked it. But it is the system that we use as a region. And I think since South Africa will be leading the SADC Committee of Ministers, we'll use that space. So that a team that was created to deal with other pests and diseases is extended to focus on this one. Because if we can be able maybe to pick it timelessly, we can give enough time to our farmers. The truth is we need to agree with farmers that we need to improve our biosecurity. We need to teach people how to make sure that our control measures are improved. Where you feed your chicks in the backyard, you don't leave food that is lying around. If the feed is unfinished, you get it into an enclosure because birds are attracted by that. So I think it is abroad. I'm saying that we will use then the SADC meetings so that we can have, because what is a rapid early warning system is very important. So that, and again, the other thing, Chairperson, lastly, is being the reluctance of our neighbors to declare some of these pests and diseases. At the time when we hit by owl farmworm, it has been in existence in some of our neighbors. I won't mention the countries, but we know they have been dealing with it, because the fear is that once you report to OIE, you lose out on some of the markets. So we need to find a way we can work together, because it is a worrying trend.
Drought.
Oh, thank you very much, Chair. Minister had responded, I think, in terms of the drought. But what is currently happening, and I've been in constant discussions with all the provinces, including the areas around the Western Cape, where consistently from national department, because that is a local government competency going to the provincial government. The only influence that we are having is to constantly remind the areas where the drought and get information on how far they are in terms of development. I've been in constant discussion with the Eastern Cape, with the Northern Cape, and the Northern Cape had indicated that in their meetings there's work that is being done on the ground. As soon as we get an indication from those areas, we will be able to report back. But from our side, the only thing that we can do is to push them that they come up with a declaration like they did in the Western Cape, for instance. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Jason, you wanted to ask questions for you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yeah, just before I leave for another comment, just like a minister's call, many wives. Mr. Diva Shields. It's a follow-up on what the minister said about the budget for the disaster. I want to check on the minister. If perhaps it's not possible that you will have, under your contingency plan, you have a budget for whatever happens, so that if nothing happens, then this budget grows financially year by year, then you make use of it, so that you don't have this thing that now you don't have any budget. So we under your contingency plan. So perhaps now, is that possible? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
Unfortunately, and I agree with the Honourable Member, our budget is at 63 million for disasters, and disasters stretch from flat fires to fall armyworm, and as we get used to climate change impacts, we will be able to get a number of disasters, not limited to the ones we have just been dealing with. So we need to think broader. Maybe one of the areas we are considering is to impact on our farmers to also take up insurances. We know an insurance is not an easy part because, I mean, insurance companies will demand more premium. But it is one way of dealing with it. It is to say the debate should be only on the table for all the stakeholders. But I agree with you that we need to budget more. But given the constraints we have been, our budgets have been given, one wonders, but I think we need to do everything. Thanks.
I think, Minister, what we should use the opportunity, there is a window opportunity for agricultural sector and land rural development, the operation practice. If we can work very smart and produce that plan that we've been talking about of mitigation and adaptation response to climate change, and it be included in the operation Pakisa, it can get funding. So there are certain things. Actually, ourselves complaining about resources for now should not arise until we go and test in the operation Pakisa whether we not getting funding or funded on particular important programs that we have been trying to implement, but because of lack of resources, we are able to do so. So I think that should be our approach, because money would not help us as the sector. Minister?
Chairperson, we are leaving for a meeting in Mongolia, China. One of the topics there will be soil degradation, desertification, the issues of mitigation and the rest. What we were debating last week at the committee with the Department of DR was to say there are funds that are made available by global funders. As a department, we need to develop our own needs in those areas so that we are able to have some of those funds. And I'm sure we will come back and report as to how we have planned properly. Because the global funders do give funds. When you deal with greening as one of the processes, because when you green, you are dealing with what is called the carbon sink harvesting, so that you reduce the carbon by planting trees that use carbon for their own photosynthesis that reduces it and in exchange for oxygen. Those are things I think we need to get involved on. But I think a report by the team will have to come because the Department of Forestry will be attending the same meeting, that such funds do exist and they can cover a number of the issues or areas we talk of when we speak of land degradation, land care programs, the issues of planting new trees. Let me report that this week we planted about 300 trees in a rural town of Madatia, because the campaign is to green both by introducing the indigenous trees and also fruit trees as we speak of agroforestry.
That's what we are trying to say, Minister. Let's use those opportunities
We have invited FAO and NEPOT, and all of them, they were showing how, as South Africa, we can use this opportunity of reprioritizing agriculture to tap their skills to help us to develop plans that will be funded, because there is a difference between having plans and having plans that will be funded. There are two different things. If you have plans that are just plans, then you will not get funded, but you must get business plans that actually help scan the environment, have smart objectives, and better indicators. Then you are going to be able to get funding. So I think that's what the department has to work on. The second issue on drought, there has been a decision. I'm not sure whether this 300 and what that you've called, is your 1% of your budget? It's more. It's 3. I'm saying 3 million, is it the 1% of your budget? Because, yes, 3 million, is it 1% of your total budget? So, and the law says that you must budget 1% for the disaster. So you have to align yourself towards that. Because as you go to Treasury, they are going to ask you this question that I'm asking. Is your budget, is it 1% of your budget allocated to disaster? And that budget is meant to intervene in the waiting for the process that Honorable State indicates, because that one is a process. But each department, in terms of their line function, they were supposed to use the 1% to deal with those drought or disaster, let me say disaster areas that might be felt, the areas in that particular moment, until various governments, because this one is the issue of government. Government, local municipality must declare the area and send their report to the province. Province declare it, and then that's when it comes to national. But we've been indicating that with farmers, it's very critical that we become more sensitive, because if the drought affects particular crops, how you intervene and assist that farmer, it's very important. Because if you wait for this process, that farmer would have collapsed immediately. So it cannot wait for that process. So that's why it's important that our 1% is mainly assisting to target those areas. There are huge situations that might not be able to be covered with 1%, like in the area of where the problem is huge, like the national one. But in areas where it's a particular area where you just need to assist with folders and boreholes, shouldn't wait for the process of this long process, because farmers depend on our reaction or reactive approach in terms of them surviving in the sector itself. So I think that's what I think that you will have to see that when 1% is been allocated for such areas, and therefore means that you have to then capacitate that monitoring and evaluation, because now immediately you know, this government has got a very serious problem. Immediately you declare any area, if it's a stadium, the cement, the sand, whatever goes up, prices goes up, including when you deal with boreholes. I was so shocking that we are paying 120, 150 for borehole. What is the difference between the borehole that I have in my house and this that is being digged by the department? So I've been wondering, what is the story? And these things are something that, even if we can avail all the resources, as long as we are not managing this price inflation, Minister, we are not moving in the right direction, because it will continuously remain very small. So it's something that we have to look at, how we keep the price and get South patriotic South Africans that will work with government in dealing with the problems that are facing by the nation, and do away with these things of everything. When the government resolves to intervene in particular areas, prices goes up immediately. It cannot work like that. So I think that's something that we have to work on. Thank you very much, DG and your team. We would expect to get that, correction or rectification of your APP as an addendum, so that it can be officially tabled through Parliament. Thank you very much. We'll now look at the second item on the agenda, which is looking at the B list, the deliberation on the Liquor Product Act. Minister, you are invited to stay, but if you have some other commitment, you can be released. 5 minutes? No, 2 minutes. Can it be enough? Okay. 2 minutes break. That presentation, you're welcome to do that. The time is yours, administrator. Administrating officer, you can present one hour by Honorable Maroy, want to see. Okay. Let's present it.
Is it a presentation or an explanation?
Yes. But I have a lengthy document, so I was avoiding that, and I hope it's an explanation. Welcome, ma'am.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The explanation relates to Section 4, the granting of the exemption there in the Liquor Products Amendment Bill. Section 11 was explained by the state law advisors, so it's important that it should remain. And with regard to the exemption under Section 4, I think I must just read out what the proposal is in the bill. It says the minister may grant exemption under such circumstances and subject to such conditions as he or she may prescribe from a provision referred to in subsection 1E. So when I went back into the notes, in 2013 there was a proposal drafted jointly with the state law advisors at the time. And the motivation at the time was that we did not want the use of powder, and there was an inclusion of powder, which turns into a liquor product only when water is added, as defined under Section 4 of the Act, to necessarily be subject to the provisions of the Act. But if required, the Minister may, by regulation, prohibit the sale of such product. The reason was the fact that beer powder will also now fall under the scope of the Liquor Products Act as a result of beer being included in the Act. Currently, beer powder are used in townships to produce home brews and is also sold in the townships. The intention was not to necessarily prohibit or to regulate such products because it only becomes a liquor product. The beer powder itself is not a liquor product, but it becomes a liquor product the moment that water is added to that product. The intention would, however, be not to allow liquor made from such powder to be sold in cafes, as it could be bought by children, which was the initial reason why the powder was included in the Act with the previous amendment bill in 2009. Other types of powder products were being sold in cafes and it was not regulated in any act, and therefore it was brought under the scope of the Liquor Product Act at the time. But now, with beer coming into the ambit of the Act, we are having unintended consequences as we will then be regulating beer powder as well. This then provides the Minister with an enabling provision to exclude beer powder should this be necessary and to address any unintended consequences. So this was the reason for the exemption.
That was the explanation, Honourable Members. Section 4. Do we have a problem with it? I don't remember. Honourable Malu.
No, we did check. You will recall that that was the section that deals with exemptions. And we are talking about the implication of the exemption if we are to maintain 0.5%. But I'm okay with the explanation. I've also read and reread and read and reread. I don't think there's a problem with it. I just want to quickly migrate to something else. Can I do so?
On the issues that were grey areas.
Yeah, on one issue which was raised by...
Yes.
Yes. Okay. On the repeal and the amendment. Can I comment on that one? No. Is it repeal and deleted or repeal and amendment? Repeal and deleted.
And then go into the process of section by section deliberations. I assume honourable members have read. We're not going to read loud or repeat. I'm going to allow our legal persons to lead us, and the members would indicate whether they agree. And so that we move on.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to the members once again. We are now on the process to adopt the proposals that came from the committee through the A list that is now appearing as B10A of 2016, and the A there what makes reference to the document as the A-list. So what we are adopting today and deliberating on are the changes that now the committee has proposed after hearing the public and hearing the department. So if you look at the cover pages of the two documents, the A-list and the B-bill, it appears to indicate that it is now the bills and the A-list as proposed by the portfolio committee is no longer as introduced by the department or by the minister when it came in for introduction. So that's the first main change which appears on the two documents, the A-list and the B-bill. And then now moving into the content and substance of the changes and the bill itself, the eventual product that then the committee will be reporting on. We did not make any changes in the preamble of the bill and the long title, so we move straight to clause one of the bill, the B bill. Again, there were discussions, but there was no change that was made on the definition that appears before the committee as per introduction and as per the deliberations and inputs that came to the department. So we put clause one for adoption unless there's something members that wants to raise.
Honorable Chair, it's again me on this reading of the bill. As far as I understand, we must actually read the word. You can't just say adopted as clause one. We must read the general rules.
Accept members must read the bill. And then when we say clause one, giving you opportunity to look at the clause one and say I agree with it. It doesn't mean that we must just read the punishment at school. When you are at school, you will stand there and say, read chapter one. You must read loudly and stand there. I don't think that's what is meant to say clause by clause. You can read it in your heart, and doesn't mean we're supposed to punish our legal advisor to read. Read for us. So, Honorable State.
Chair, I'm trying to look for it in the rules, but as far as I'm aware, and we've done it in the past, you must actually physically read it, like in school.
Which rule is that? Can we verify it? There is nowhere where in the rules where it talks about sentence by sentence or when it talks about clause by clause. Now she's putting clause one.
Okay. Do we agree with clause one, honorable members?
Agreed.
For me, clause two.
Thank you, Chairperson. Then clause two is aligned with the Principal Act. It relates to the new board that previously was the Wine and Spirit Board, but now it's going to be termed Wine Certification Authority. There also the deliberations took place, and the only changes that came about where in relation to the nomination process, where the committee indicated that they would rather still be okay with having the three officers of the department, but it must be indicated as to who nominates them. And there it's now coming out on page 3 of the B Bill version in line 53, in line 51, to say that the now nominated officers, that would be a process done by the DG. And then another change was just in relation to the remuneration of the same board. The committee had indicated that the involvement of the Minister of Finance for consistency purposes and understanding should also be involved there for consultation and the making of the decision on the remuneration. So for clause two, those were the only changes, and they are appearing on the video as indicated now. Thank you, Chair. Clause two, placed for adoption or finality. Thank you, Chair.
Agreed, honorable members. Agreed to clause two as amended. Agreed.
Thank you, Chairperson. On clause three, after deliberations and all processes that the committee engaged on, it remains as is, and it is placed before the members for decision on adoption.
Do we agree, honorable members, adopting clause 3? Agreed.
On clause 4, again, it relates to the amendment of section 6 of the Principal Act, and section 6 deals with the requirements regarding alcoholic food beverages. Again, from what the department introduced after deliberations and discussions, there were no changes and the provision remains the same. It is placed for adoption. Thank you, Chair.
Do you agree, honourable members?
Agreed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Clause 5 is the one that brings in new provisions that were not part of the Principal Act, hence that now, after Section 6 of the Principal Act, going to be 6A, 6B, and 6C. There were deliberations, a number of deliberations and explanations and everything that took place, which also included the definitions of traditional African beer and beer. But as things stand now on the proposals of the committee, there was no change on clause 5, and it is therefore placed for adoption before the committee.
Agreed, honourable members, to adopt clause 5. Agreed.
For clause 6, it is basically a repeal of section 10, and the department did provide an explanation. And now the repeal or the proposal to remove this section from the statute book is placed before the members for adoption, the repeal of section 10 of the Principal Act.
Agreed to the repeal? Agreed.
Thank you, Chair. On clause 7, it was proposing amendments to section 11 of the Principal Act. Again, there were no changes that were made there, and the provision that was introduced remains the same, and it is placed for the decision of the members whether it is adopted.
Agreed, honourable members, adopting section 11. Seven, yes. Agreed, thank you.
Thank you, members. We move to clause 8. Clause 8 seeks to amend section 16 and section 16 from the Principal Act is speaking, its title there is the restriction on the importation of certain alcoholic products, and the changes there as provided by the department, we did not have any input or proposal to change anything. It is then placed before the members for adoption. Thank you. Moving on to clause 9, which seeks to amend section 17, and section 17, it deals with the exportation of liquor products. Again, there, the deliberations took place, and there were no proposals or changes that amend what was in the introduced bill. I place it for a decision on adoption.
Adoption for section for clause 9. Agreed.
We move to clause 10, which amends the section 18 of the Principal Act. Again, clause 10, after deliberations and consideration of the public input, there were no changes, and clause 10 is placed for adoption as is in the introduced bill.
Adoption for clause 10, honourable members, agreed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Clause 11 is the one where the committee took input from the public as well as from the department, and clause 11 is seeking to amend section 19, and section 19 was speaking to the confiscation of properties, and in the provisions that appear with the introduced bill, the committee accepted them as they are and every explanation, but there was an addition to say to allow that not necessarily every administrative process must go to court. There are provisions that were requested to say to deal with the court delays and the processes that take forever in court, at least there should be another alternative process to deal with the properties that have been confiscated on the materials that come from elsewhere. And that in clause 11 is what it is seeking to amend or to propose as the changes into the introduced bill. The rest of the other sections, basically it was to assist the CREDA office to ensure that they locate the proper places where the amendment must take place. So that is what clause 11 is all about, and I place it for the decision of the committee for adoption. Thank you.
adoption of the clause 11, honourable members, with the inclusion of what you have proposed. Agreed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Again, we are now on clause 20, and clause 20 sought to amend clause 12 sought to amend section 20 of the Principal Act. Again, there were no changes after deliberations from what the introduced version looked like. I place it for adoption.
Agreed to, honourable members.
We move to clause 13. Again, for clause 13, what was deliberated and introduced is with clarity and was presented to the members. I place clause 13 for adoption.
Clause 13 adopted, honourable members. Agreed. Thank you.
The same applies for clause 14. What was presented from the introduced bill and explained by the department and input consideration got to the point that there are no changes in respect of clause 14. I place it for adoption as is.
Adoption of clause 14, honourable members. Agreed. Thank you very much.
Clause 15 is also seeking to amend section 26 of the Principal Act, and it deals with vicarious liability. Again, the proposals that came from the department, nothing from the committee was proposed for changes, and I place the substance and content of clause 15 as is for adoption.
Adoption of clause 15, honourable members. Agreed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Clause 16 is a provision that from the Principal Act it deals with the regulations and enables the delegation of making regulations out of the main legislation, which is this Principal Act. There, the only addition that the committee provided and wanted to see was to say, as a resolution of this committee had been taken, whatever legislation that is made by this committee, should there be regulations, they would want to have an input or to consider them. So clause 16, the amendment of the regulation provisions of the Principal Act, has been proposed to be amended to include that change, that whatever regulation that the department will make, the committee would prefer to see it, and therefore such regulations must be tabled for information purposes and for consideration. So there shall be tabling of the regulations. That is clause 16, Chairperson, and the proposed change. I place it for adoption.
Remember, we're saying tabling, it might be a difficulty.
Chairperson, I think we said for information. The consideration means we will have to discuss it and come up with things. I seem to remember that we said for information, so that we know about it, but we don't have to discuss it. And then it's up to this committee to call the department if we want to discuss something with them that is concerning us.
I think it was a consideration and approval, and we said that it should be consideration, not approval. It means that it doesn't need our approval as a committee, but can consider it as a committee. Because if we say for information, if there's something that we don't agree with in the regulation, as a committee, we should look at that part and then say, this one we are not agreeing with it. That's why we said we must consider. But it is not for the approval. Approval means that it should go through process of parliament. Yeah. Yeah. Agreed?
Thank you, Chairperson. 17. Again, there were no changes that the committee proposed in line with clause 17, so it remains as is. I place it for adoption.
Adoption for section 17, honourable members. Agreed.
So the 18, the proposals for enabling the clean out of the process with the amendments that have been proposed in this, and there were no changes that the committee proposed onto this clause. I place clause 18 for adoption.
Clause 18 for the adoption, honourable members. Agreed.
Again, in clause 19, it deals with the laws that are already in place as appears in the schedule and what the department was proposing that it be changed. On that, other than clarity and explanation on issues that arose, eventually there was nothing that was changed and the explanations were accepted, and therefore I place clause 19 as is for adoption.
Adoption of clause 19, honourable members. Agreed.
I come to the last clause, which is clause 20, the name of the bill and the process as to how it will commence. The only thing that was proposed to be changed in this instance is the year, because this bill was introduced in 2016, but we are now in 2017. If we are lucky enough and the President signs it into law this year, then it will be a 2017 Act, but that's basically only the change that took place just to align the time of year and the place where we are at. I place clause 20 for adoption.
Clause 20 for adoption, honourable members. Agreed.
Chairperson, that then looks into both the A list and all its provisions which have been adopted and agreed to by the committee, as well as the B bill version, which takes into account all the changes that have been accepted and are now incorporated into the B bill version, and that is the bill that is now called B10B of 2016, and that is the bill that the committee will be preparing a report on to go to the House for second reading and adoption and referral to the second House. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mpumi. Honourable members, I then put this bill and its amendment for adoption by yourself and tied. Can we get the mover for the adoption? Honourable State.
I propose that we adopt the bill as amended by this committee chair.
Seconder. Honourable Tomoe.
I second the proposal.
Thank you very much. I'm now going to ask Albertina, because already we have prepared the report. You must go through the report, and honourable members, you agree with it, and then it will go through the process, through the through the parliament process, the report. You don't have Albertina has a copy, so it's going to read it for you.
Thank you, Chair. A report of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries on the Liquor Products Amendment Bill, Bill Number 10 of 2016, dated today's date, the 5th of September 2017. The Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries, having considered the subject matter on the Liquor Products Amendment Bill, Bill Number 10 of 2016, National Assembly Section 75, referred to it on the 11th May 2016, CATC 11th May 2016, and classified by Joint Tagging Mechanism, JTM, as Section 75 Bill, CATC 30 August 2016, reports the bill with amendments, Bill Number 10B of 2016. The bill was amended as follows. That will be the reflection, they will incorporate the amendments that you have agreed to in the bill. It will appear as a bill with the amendments in the ATC. So the bill to be considered. The B bill then will be distributed to the House, to all the members of the Parliament for debate in the House. Thank you.
We get the mover for the adoption of the report as tabled by Albertina. Honorable Matali.
I move that the report be adopted. Thank you.
Seconder. Honorable Fandana.
Yes.
I second that proposal.
Thank you very much. The report is duly adopted. Thank you very much, honorable members and the department. That was the last item on the agenda. Honorable Maloy?
This is just a housekeeping matter. Do we, as a committee, want to debate this amendment in the House? I think it's just one thing we have amended. Or do you want the chairperson just to present the report on our behalf then? Does it? No, it's their choice. They must decide. If we decide not to, us will advise the program that we are not debating. If we are debating, we'll advise them. If we make declarations, we'll advise them. So that's why I'm saying we must decide here.
Honorable Chairperson, unfortunately, I can't decide here. We take a decision of that with our whips. So I haven't got the permission to say what we're going to do. I will take advice from them. So what was your proposal, Honorable Maloy? Because it doesn't mean anything. The party are still going to consult. But we knew that we were debating the bill. We are finalizing the bill today. Obviously, it's going through the process of Parliament, and we're supposed to have looked at that. Honorable Maloy?
Now, my proposal is that because there are no major changes, these are just minor amendments, so there is no need for a debate in the House. Then the chairperson will just present the report on our behalf, that's it. But this is what the other parties who need permission must then indicate to their parties that as a committee feel that it's not necessary because these are just minor amendments.
I think thanks for the proposal. It is going to help us to move forward on this on the report. We'll make as we table the report. Of course, it depends on us. If we don't prioritize. Because there will be Mpumalanga and the national report that need to be debated. If we prioritize this one, we must know that the others will lapse in the process. So it's for us to look at all those advantages and disadvantages of the process. So in the near future, Honorable Sain, we must not present Honorable Farlan. He's distracting you. So you must sit somewhere, Honorable Father. So honorable members, there is an approval for the oversight to Northwest. So the official they are still dealing with the logistics, but the program has been approved and will be circulated so that honorable members can start preparing for the oversight Northwest.
Yes, just on a technical matter again, I think there was a problem with my email. Albertina knows about it. I'm struggling to get the information from the portfolio, and if we can't, please get it as soon as possible. Maybe Chair, we can even make the input, because I'm not travelling 500 kilometres past the town again and come back to come and sleep tonight at another place. I would like to get the program so that we can have a look at it, Chair. This thing of travelling 500 kilometres that way and coming back 600 that way to come and sleep at that town that we passed this morning, is not doing it.
At least this time we'll consider that, but the issue is members. That we need to take in cognizance. If you want to identify projects ourselves, that's what is resulting in long distance. Because sometimes we say we develop interest on a particular project, we find that it's at the border. And
the reality of the matter again is that the experience shows that in most instances, these border areas of the province, there is no one to taking care of them. Our visit actually has made impact, and we shouldn't regret that because the border between Mpumalanga and Limpopo, no one does care about it. The border between Northern Cape and Western Cape, both areas, nothing has been done. The border, all those border areas are being neglected, and we shouldn't regret that we visited those areas, even if the traveling was long, but it was worthwhile driving. So that's honorable members. Honorable Maloy and honorable Matar, you'll follow. No, you're not cheering.
No, just these are housekeeping matters, and I'm not trying to be controversial. You know, officials, normally when they arrange these things, it's difficult for them to take into consideration what they are saying because of their work there and so on, how they are supposed to be doing things. And I'll make one example. You know, in terms of transport, to get transport from the Free State to go and transport people who are in Mpumalanga, to me it doesn't make sense. As if there is no transport around Mpumalanga and so on, and people who know those places and areas who can transport members of parliament. I'm not sure why are we doing that in parliament. I think maybe when you discuss it with the chair of chairs, you need to take this thing into consideration. Because some of these drivers are even tired when they drive from the Free State or from Eastern Cape to the Northwest, where transport us in the Northwest and go back to Eastern Cape. Doesn't make sense. That is the first point. The second point is, I'm happy that this time there was some consultation, but I hope they will do it. You know, recommendations made them by members of parliament who come from areas that we are visiting are important and they must be considered. This decision that says, they can't do it, they have their own things and so on, where members of parliament will sleep in some cuckoos and so on and so forth and be expected to be productive the next day, doesn't make sense. So if you can take that up with the chair of chairs, just to consider those things, it's very important. We have made recommendations and so on, and I know that some of these things might not be considered because they do their things upon in their own way and so on. Thanks, Chair.
Let me just respond on that one. I think in the last visit, we have actually forced ourselves within that process and the situation was better. That's why even the last area of Marapian, because it was my constituency, I should suspect that I slept in this hotel and it's fine. So go ahead, get it, no matter what. I'm saying that you are right, and that's what we've been trying to do. Even with this one, we said because Honorable Maloy knows coming from Northwest, he must assist us even in terms of the route. I think what we're still going to fight for is that arrangement of getting service provider in the provinces. You know, there is interest of officials which is not our officials, those that are dealing with procurement, they're consistently doing this nonsense of getting transport of Free State to come in Mpumalanga. It's like Mpumalanga, they don't have 4x4. And one of the things that we have done, honorable members, is that we said our members will not use kumbis because they cannot go on the mountain. We need 4x4s because we're dealing with farmers. In the farms, there is no tarred road. Therefore, we need safer cars in those areas, which they've agreed on. And they would have agreed, they've agreed on in the last visit. But with this one, they will agree, because we'll go and fight in that meeting. So I think Honorable Maloy, constantly our officials must interact with yourself, because you know the area, you'll direct us proper, so that we don't go to east and go to west and come back to east. It will be a problem. Honorable Matali, Honorable Stein, you will follow Honorable Matali.
You have covered me and comments of Honorable Maloy, because what she was saying, Honorable Stein, is correct. We must just work smart. I think that's what is being requested. And if we consult each other, we work smarter. When we were talking about accommodation, I remember the time we went northwest, where we went to sleep in a place where when you walk into the room, the food is ready there, but you don't know how it arrived there, you know, and you are supposed to eat it. It's problematic. So I think I'm comfortable with what they're proposing and how we must do our thing. Just to be smart, I think that's it. And you can only do so if you work with people who know the place. You can't organize from Cape Town and pray that when you arrive in Northwest, you'll find things in order. It doesn't work that way. But thanks.
Honorable Stein?
Yes, thank you, Chair. And so I know that I will be taking on Honorable Maloy if things are not right. Now, Chair, I really don't mind us traveling to borders and everything, but I think what you've mentioned now is just that we travel 500 kilometers to that way and then go back 600 kilometers to go and sleep in a specific place. I think it's almost the same problem that we have with the transport, that someone specifically wants us to stay in certain places. I don't mind staying in towns. We were very nicely accommodated there in Marapuana. I'm sure smaller other places have similar, even if we can't stay all in the same place. But it's this thing of traveling all over the country to go and sleep at specific places. That is the only thing that I wanted to stop, so that we can have the programming early on. Even if we are not from the province, I travel a lot around the country, and we can make proposals or recommendations even if before we go there, because sometimes it looks silly if we arrive and it's middle of the night or late, and then the next morning we have to leave very early again. So we can just get the program as soon as possible, that will assist us.
And one of the things that we've not treated smarter is the SNT of members. Usually you get it when you come back. I'm not sure what you must do with it. So, but we have to, we've consistently raised those issues in the chairs meetings, but we're not winning the battle. Because, you see, it's again, we're disadvantaged by those that come before us. There were those that the first day go to the oversight, get the SNT and go back home. So then Parliament has to balance, because it's very difficult to get them to repay the money of Parliament. So if it was not that, probably we're going to get our money as it was before. As we're asking the question, that was the reason that we're given. So we're paying the sins of the incumbent. So I think those are the issues, Honourable Members. So, Department, will give you the program. This time we must improve and get ready. Please, those that are not going to do anything must not be with us, please, because it might even cause accidents. You know, this long queue with a lot of people who are not doing anything, they must not come. Yeah, because when you get lost, when you're supposed to turn, it becomes a hassle of because somebody might not see what is coming to the site, and members might involve in accidents. Please reduce the convoy, and those that have responsibility to play, they must follow us. And when you go to another sub-region, those that are from another region must remain in those regions. We'll get somebody there. So so that we limit the convoy. And the last thing, honorable members, tomorrow we must adopt the report so that, because in our program we chose that we are going to adopt the report and table them before the oversight. We need a quorum to adopt the report. We've not formally done the process. We can't now, Honorable Fandar. We'll confirm the venue. The venue is not yet confirmed. We're going to adopt the report, Mpumalanga report and Naisna report. That was the last on the agenda. Thank you very much.